And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about,
all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Yes, and it's time for Stages. I'm Regina Botros to take you through the next half an hour, and we have got loads for you this evening. We're going to try and jam-pack as much as we can in tonight's show. We will be talking a little later to Julia Christensen, who is playing the protagonist or the main character in Chapel Perilous, which is playing at the New Theatre. Also, we'll have a quick chat with Phil Scott from the Wharf Review. They're filming it, and so you can go and see theatre at the cinema now. And so we'll have a chat with him about this. It's celebrating 15 years of the Wharf Review, and he's like one of the leading hands in the making of this this fun political satire show that comes out every year and talks about, you know, the people in politics and the things that have been going on over the year. We'll also have reviews. We've got so many reviews tonight. It's a good way to give you an idea of some of the shows that are going on. So the Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo is almost over, and Trish Stiles is going to give us a review of that. Smurf in Wonderland by Pixie Willow. Also The Bodyguard and Big Fish. Oh my goodness, there's so much going on Stages this evening, so stay with us.
To SER, we'll be reporting live from Canberra Tuesday, May 9, to tell you everything you need to know about this year's budget.
How will families fare? What about small business? And how about funding for education, health and the environment?
Tune in to hear the 2SER team's in-depth analysis and independent coverage. Tuesday, May 9, from 7:30pm on 2SER 107.3.
And some news, if you are a writer, STC, Sydney Theatre Company, are looking for applications for an emerging writers group, which is a new initiative that's just started. And so if you want to be a part of this, you've got until Friday to put in your submission, to send a little bit of your play and to work with Sydney Theatre Company and their artistic directors, their literary manager and their award fellows and resident directors. This is a great opportunity if you're a new writer wanting to try out. Just hop on their website and you'll find all the information there. Here's a little bit of, I won't give you any more information than this. You can tell Trish Stiles has been out to the theatre.
Should stay, I would only be in your way. So I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way.
I've been to see the musical The Bodyguard at the Lyric Theatre, and it's running there until June 25th when it goes out on tour around Australia. Now, I have to say that I was a little bit of trepidation about seeing this musical, as I never really liked the 1992 Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner film The Bodyguard. But this musical is the same but different, and I have to admit it's a guilty pleasure, and I enjoyed this immensely. Now, it is basically the same story, but it's peppered with 16 fantastic Whitney Houston hits, and they are just beautifully performed by Pauline. And Pauline is a Fijian born Australian who was very popular on Australian Idol a few years ago and was famously called Fat by Dicko. Look, she is just absolutely spectacular in this production. And I also really liked Kip Gamblin, who plays the bodyguard. He was fantastic in this as well. And I have to say that Thea Sharrock's direction does not take this seriously at all. This is very much a B-grade script with wonderful hits throughout. And it's one of those things where it's actually so bad, it's good. And that's what you have to say about The Bodyguard, the musical. But I enjoyed this more than I've enjoyed anything this year. So that's really saying something. And I went out singing, I Want to Dance with Somebody, floating on air. I felt so wonderful. But, you know, I think it's one of those things that you just have to go in, have a good time, put your brain at the door. And if you really like sequins and smoke machines and really daggy sort of 80s choreography and just the 1980s itself, then this is a must-see musical for you. I really enjoyed this, The Bodyguard at the Lyric. Thanks. Bye.
You know, it was right here on this spot that your granddad helped me catch my first fish. It was this big.
How'd you do it?
Well, that is a Bloom family secret, passed only from father to son. Be the hero of your story if you can. Be the champion in the fight, not just the man. On a wing or on a prayer, you'll get there only with your voice. A story in your heart, you won't need any other choice. You're a hero fighting dragons, winning wars.
So, we just saw Big Fish at the Hayes Theatre, a musical adapted from the novel by Daniel Wallace. And you may have seen the film, which was by John August. And the book of this musical is by John August as well, with music and lyrics by Andrew Lipper. What did you think of it, Alita?
It's a tricky one in some sorts of ways because I guess there was this really great feeling of an interesting story about the power of storytelling for families and generations and the stories that make up our identity or our lack of identity. So it promised a richness, and I imagined a bit of magic because it's about these fairy tales that Edward Bloom, the lead character played by Philip Lowe, weaves for his son. And over the course of the show, his son begins to question whether these are true and who his father really is as he learns that his father is dying. So I thought it was going to be a really kind of powerful and also magical journey into storytelling and family. And in a lot of ways, I wasn't sure if that magic really came across in this production.
Yeah, so we should say sort of what the novel and then the play and film have done is it taken the Homeric great myths and sort of transferred them to kind of a very small town, middle America. It's a very entertaining show, and they're beautiful songs, I thought, and I think the cast do a great job. They're great. Great talents.
And Katrina Ritalik as Sandra Bloom. Every time she sang, it was just like, wow, she is. And I heard people gasping at the end of her kind of key song, which I can't remember the name of. But all of them, their voices are fantastic. They're really great performances.
Performers. Some great swing actors. Who plays the giant again? What's his name?
We loved the giant.
Yes, the giant.
It was played by Seth Drury.
Seth Drury, yes.
Carl the Giant.
And then there was Brendan. Yeah, so there is some funny things. There are giants and there are mermaids and there's all the stuff in mythology. Brendan Lovett, who played, he played like a ring circus ringleader, and he played the sort of, you know, the chain-smoking whiskey doctor in the town at one point. And so these great swing actors doing these great character acting
physical
roles.
Transformations.
And there is that idea of big stories, big fish, you know,
the
big fish that gets away.
Yeah, so I think also what really does strike you at the end is that it is incredibly moving, the final sequences, which we won't give too much away on. But for what was missing for me in the magic was redeemed in the incredibly powerful final scenes. And I don't think the cliche, there was a dry eye in the house, but you could hear people quietly sobbing because I guess in the end we are all children, we all have parents, and we are all connected to long lines of family history. And that final ending really tapped into that sense of the bigger picture about life and death and the joy and sorrow of families.
Yes, so Big Fish is playing at the Hayes Theatre
until the middle of May, I believe.
Something like that. There's a challenge in every day.
Do you think I don't understand him? Are you listening when I say he's a thoroughbred in the stable when he ought to be on the track? Let him run with a trumped up fable, 'cause he always will circle back.
Yes. And Melita Rouston and Benito D'Afonso there reviewing Big Fish, playing at the Hayes Theatre at the moment. And before that, the wonderful Trish Stars with The Bodyguard, which just sounds like the one to see.
She enjoyed that, didn't she?
Oh, didn't she? Oh, didn't she? So that sounds very exciting. Musicals, two musicals. Well, something else that's playing at the moment at the new theatre is Chapel Perilous. And we have the protagonist, the centre of this wonderful sounding production by Dorothy Hewitt. We have Julia Christensen on the line to have a chat. Welcome to Stages, Julia.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Coming on. So this is written in 1971, set around the 40s, 50s, right?
Yes.
About a sort of coming of age story.
Yeah, I think that people ask me, you know, what's the show about? And saying it's about a woman named Sally Banner is kind of the most general description of a show you can probably offer. But it is about her and her life. And it is sort of was originally written for an age range of maybe 16 to even as you could push it to, like, she could be 70 years old by the end of it. But for our purposes, we sort of condensed that because I'm very versatile as an actor, but maybe not 70 years old versatile. Not yet.
Uh-huh. But she's
suspend your disbelief.
But she's a woman of the early 70s and, sorry, well, I mean, it's written in the early 70s, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one.
And so it's about a woman who is very independent and very feisty, isn't she?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's difficult to. I think she's just a woman who's ahead of her time, and the world and the culture that she revolves in is not ready for her, and so they can't take her seriously. Which I think is now production directed by the beautiful Carissa Luttidello. I think that is something that we try to emphasize, that she goes through traumatic experiences, but people don't take this seriously because of her gender.
Yeah,
and the
straitjacket time that would have been the things that you could do as a woman and you couldn't do were very much prescribed in those times, weren't they?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, and anyone who's trying to deviate from this. But I think we're still, in saying all this, and we talk about it as being part of the show, that she's a woman mainly growing up in the 40s and early 50s is where we see most of Sally. But the same thing happens today. Because, like, even women are seen as overly emotional, and our gender is written as portrayed as overly emotional. So if we're sick or we're injured or we're just seen, a lot of it can be our emotions. It can be dismissed as being put down to being overly dramatic. Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong.
I did some looking up of what a Chapel Perilous is, and there's so many different sort of behind there. It's sort of, there's some 1485 with a sorceress attempting to seduce Sir Lancelot, and there's a sort of psychological kind of thing attached to it as well. And T.S. Eliot wrote about it, like, but the psychology of this.
Yes, he did too in The Wasteland.
Yeah. So, and there was another one which I came across, which is this sort of whether this sort of otherworldly stuff is actually helping or hindering her. Is there a sense of something outside of your control going on for you as the character? Is this
as the character
driving you?
So, I think that Sally is very much driven by a sense of faith and destiny, and she has such higher aspirations. As to be an artist, a great artist. And I think she feels that pull of something greater than herself. She aims to be more than herself. And a lot of times she references how she strives for immortality in any way that she can. I think she feels bigger than mortal. Mm. Or at least, as I say, at least strives to be such,
And is it that sort of perilous kind of, you know, is it actually a good thing that she's doing? Is there that sense of that for you? For you as the character?
Yes.
Like the danger
so.
Of it or something.
Yeah, I think rather than feeling danger, she's so fixated and determined on her dreams and aspirations and her quest for greatness, the danger of it isn't really present in
her mind.
Character. No, she because that would to be seen as a hindrance. And I think rather than that old adage of, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway, I don't know if Sally does feel fear, which is an amazing opportunity to play that character who really just dives into life.
And seductive as well.
It's so in this moment of just living and what feels good in that moment and what is her heart and what is going to take her towards happiness. And in that quest, she makes a lot of dumb mistakes. Which is, we all know those people, you know, who you love so much and you just see them doing silly things because they love someone or they love life so much that they just dive into the world without thinking of the consequences. And that is Sally to an absolute T.
And what are some of the characters she rubs up against in this piece?
Well, she does rub up against a couple of, we've got male lovers, but they're all portrayed by one actor in our production, Tom Matthews. The beautiful Tom Matthews, who has been described in a review as dashingly handsome.
There's been some really nice reviews,
So beautiful Tom Matthews plays all my male lovers over the course of my life. And Carissa, our director, was aiming for the sense that we all look for the same thing in the one person. And her first great love is, Sally's first great love is Michael. And she keeps looking for him in all of the subsequent men that she falls for. And there's shades of him in everyone who comes after, but no one can quite compare.
I was going to ask her whether this is the same. Does she keep making the same mistake over and over?
And is it like her father?
A little bit. I know. You know what? He's not like her father.
Okay,
I can happily report, at least in this production, I don't see many similarities.
Now, this is a semi-autobiographical piece of Dorothy about kind of her life as well. And she's quite, you know, a poet as well. Is the language quite poetic? And is it sort of, you know, talk about the language?
Beautiful comment from someone who came to see the show, and I was talking about was the poet. There's a couple of poems that interwoven into the text, and I asked this friend, is the poetry accessible? Do you understand what I'm trying to communicate during the poems? Because I still want people to connect and resonate rather than going, oh, this is lofty poetry now, and we're talking in heightened language and so emotionally maybe tap out. But I hope that people do still the emotionality resonates with people still. But the fantastic comment I got was, oh, but I feel like the entire text is kind of a poem. And I think that is a really succinct way of putting it. It was a great insight for me, and I'd never considered it until someone said it to me. But I feel the rhythm of the piece drives so much of it, especially in our production, the rhythm of the piece and the language. And it is slightly heightened, but because there's rhythm and movement, and they keep sort of making these sort of hand gestures, which is great for an interview, that radio interview. But there's this pulse underneath the entire text that runs throughout the entire play. So it is, again, my only real drive with that is to make it emotionally acceptable to people rather than having people go, oh, now we are saying a poem and that is something intellectual, hoping that people still go, I know what this is. Yes, I understand. I see the emotion behind what you're doing and I can resonate with that.
And Dorothy herself was a prominent communist of her time. Does this politics come into this bit?
Yes, it does. It does. There's a fantastic line as well that the monopolists shelter the war criminals. They cry peace with their fingers itching on the atom bomb, on the atom bomb. Exactly. It is so, and it's, that's Sally's line. She's a little firecracker. But she, in that moment, it is, I think the beauty of this piece is the politics did comment on the time, but how much is that line relevant to today? As well, the politics interwoven of especially, I think a lot of people of my generation are struggling to recognize the political climate that they live in. And there are threads of that echo just as true then that are just as relevant today. And I think that is the mark of extraordinary writing, something that has a permanence and a relevance no matter when it's staged and what people can connect to regardless of time.
Terrific. Well, Julia, thank you so much for joining us. It sounds like an amazing kind of interpretation with a kind of this. Can you just describe the set quickly? Mm. We're running out of time, but give us an idea.
Okay. Let's do it. The design is by the beautiful Kyle Johnson, and we've got a giant light box chapel sort of figurehead at the top. We have an altar. There's a lot of stone and religious iconography. It's a joy to play on this set. It is an absolute marvel. And so we've got Lightbox, which signifies chapel, and the chapel that Sally is questing for, which is omnipresent in all scenes as well.
Wonderful. Well, you've gotten great reviews yourself, by the way. Luminous, finely nuanced performance by Julia Christensen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Like, you're giving me the warm and fuzzies. It's lovely for the ego. Thank you very much.
Sounds like a wonderful production. Thanks for joining us, Julia.
You are so, so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And Trish Stars will be reviewing that for us next week, and I'm sure she just loved it herself as well. That's the Chapel Perilous, which is playing at the New Theatre until the 27th till the 27th of May. And you're listening to Stages. Well, the Wharf Review is celebrating its 15 years, and we have Phil Scott on the line to give us a plug section. So there's something very special happening with this performance of the Wharf. Phil, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, it's a very special night for us because it's a live show, obviously, at the Sydney Theatre Company, and we've been doing it for a number of years, and we did a 15-year anniversary show, which was filmed, and it's going to be shown at the Dendy Opera Keys on Tuesday, 9th of May at 8 p.m.
Oh, wow. The 9th of May, isn't that budget night?
Yes, well, I mean, everyone will want to get out and away from that, won't
they? That's right. We're going to be watching you instead. So 15 years, what a span. How did you know what to choose to put in the show?
Well, that was pretty hard. I mean, it's not really a best of it as much as our favourite bits.
Right.
But we covered a few prime ministers and a few changes of government.
Is it sort of an historical look at our country as well in that way?
Yes, it basically sums up this century so far. It's been looking all that great, really.
Oh, wow. Have you got, does Trump, do we see him? Does it come?
No, this happened before Trump came along, really. Okay. This, in fact, was the show we did the year before last.
Oh, I see.
But it hasn't dated, because it didn't date anyway, because it was a historical thing.
Exactly.
But, we got lots of Gillard in with Mandy Bishop, who famously is a wonderful Gillard imitator.
Yes.
And we got, Clive Palmer. Some of those people have moved on since then, but they'll never be forgotten.
No.
Better or worse.
So I'm just trying to think now which one was which, but is the Dina Tali song in this one?
Yes, I believe it is, yeah.
Good, I love that.
Oh, good, yes. That's right. It's a very cool number, that.
It's so cool. All the Dina Tali's coming on. Oh, that's great. I love that.
As well as Kevin playing Phantom of the Opera.
And, of course, my George Brandis in the
George
ballet
Brandis.
Tutu and tights.
Oh, lovely.
From the waist down and then the waist up in the suit.
Well, I haven't seen many theatres filmed, but what I have seen, it's actually a really interesting way to see it because you can get to see up close things and angles of performances where in some ways the theatre you kind of removed in a way, but this makes it sort of in some ways more intimate.
Yeah, it was great. We did a special extra performance with an audience, but there were six cameras in the auditorium to catch all sorts of angles and stuff like you were talking about.
So you
sort of feel like an insider.
Yes, it's like the insiders set to music, really.
All right, so if you're not watching the budget, it's time to get out
to the Dendy Opera Key.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Phil Scott, for joining us.
Thanks for coming on the program, Phil.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Thank you. That is the Wharf Review, 15 years, celebrating 15 years, next Tuesday at 8 p.m. At the Dendy Opera Key. Get along and see it. Trish Stiles has been out to see something else at the theatre. Oh, my gosh, she gets around, doesn't she? What's she been to see?
I've been to see the play Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, and this has been written by Rajiv Joseph in 2009. It's being restaged at the Old Fitz Theatre, and it's been beautifully directed by Claudia Barry. The action starts after one of the American soldiers in the play, Tom, played beautifully by Stephen Moltari, has just completed a raid of Saddam Hussein's oldest son, Uday. And when they broke into Uday's palace, they found that it was mainly made of gold and had a lot of golden things. So Tom has stolen a gold gun and a gold toilet seat because he hopes when he gets back to America that this will fund his new life and be able to help him to get into business. Now, Tom, along with Kev, another soldier who's played beautifully by Josh Anderson, have been given the lowly job of guarding the animals at the Baghdad Zoo, and this is where they meet the tiger, who's played beautifully by Maggie Dentz. Now, the tiger is behind bars, and what I loved about this is that in the Pulitzer Prize original Broadway production of this show, the tiger was played by Robin Williams, and I'm sure that that would have been amazing because the tiger has a lot of the funny lines, and he would have been really great. But in choosing Maggie Dentz to play this, it's brilliant because she adds a nice balance by having the older woman with the two young American soldiers. And I think it really needed that balance. It would have been too male heavy if you'd had an older male playing the role. So I really loved Claudia's decision on this. And also what I love about this play is that we see everything through the tiger's eyes and that the tiger can explain the terrible invasion in 2003 of the US Army of Iraq, but it's also not a judgmental play. To me, this is one of the greatest war plays ever written. So don't miss it. It's really a treat, this play, and it's playing at the Old Fitz until May 6th. Thanks. Mertepe Vincenor, Kofali Rakdom. Oh, show me the way, show me the way, show me the way. To shake a memory. Show me the way, show me the way, show me the way. To shake a memory.
And Pixie Willow, what have you been out to see?
Smurf in Wonderland at the Riverside Theatre is one man's journey into the history of being both a Western Sydney Wanderers fan and also a Sydney FC fan. David Williams spins a shaggy dog story of his life imbued with football. Smurf in Wonderland is rich with anecdotes as fresh as the sweat from a soccer shirt. This comfortable monologue educated those unknown to the ins and outs of the sport. This is a very engaging production, and he addresses the audience as though you are part of the crowd, dividing half into Sydney FC and the other half into Western Sydney Wanderers. He recreates the atmosphere of a football match by teaching us chants and holding banners, shining a light onto the power fans can have over the game itself. I found Williams' dry delivery lacked energy but would work marvellously as a radio play. As a bonus, the script is sold with the program and reads a little like a Willie Russell play. Williams, with a doctorate in philosophy, unpacks his biographical story from the perspective of people-watching, character and identity. He enjoys creating works of social relevance and emotional impact, as his radar has been on watching and engaging with people as much as with the game itself. There is an incredibly moving moment when David sings a simple football chant. This spellbinding moment held a feeling of religious reverence. Tears sprang to not only his eyes, but many members of the audience too. David's anecdotal and engaging stories are full of masochistic sense of belonging that affirms and values kinship, hopes, dreams, and loyalty that come hand in hand with being a dyed-in-the-wool football fan. Smurf in Wonderland is going to be playing until the 29th of April at the Riverside Theatre, and from the 2nd to the 13th of May at the Griffin Theatre.
Ah, that's a little Bill Callahan, and he's playing in June at the Sydney Opera House.
He's got a bit of a Lou Reedy sound, hasn't he?
He's a very, yes, Americano, yeah. Kind of very country Americana. Yeah. You're Roderick Chambers.
I am.
You did make it.
It's been great being here. Thanks, Regina.
I'm Regina Botros. We'll be back next week with more.